prior to 1970, with the advent of the new liturgical calendar. Prior to that, we, on the old calendar, we referred to this feast often as the candle mass. So there would be a blessing of candles, which we just did, of course, at the beginning. And this would be symbolic. These lights would be symbolic then of the light that Christ brings into our lives. And that is also indicated in our gospel reading today. We hear from the words coming from the mouth of Simeon, this prophet. He says that, finally, my eyes have seen the salvation of God, that the light to the nations is now before me, he says. You know, that, that Jesus is the light for all of us who sit in darkness. So what is this presentation? I think it's important to understand a little bit about some of the Jewish practices. Otherwise, this is just some sort of a nonsense little story in the life of Jesus. From the time of the giving of the law through Moses to the people of God, to Israel, the part of that law, of course, demanded that the firstborn sons of a family would be offered to the Lord, would be consecrated to the Lord in some way. And particularly after this law of Moses, the descendants of Levi, the tribe of Levi was the one from which the priests of the temple would be chosen to offer service to God on behalf of the people. So they would give animal sacrifice and cereal sacrifice and such to God the Father, to God in the temple. They were taken from the tribe of Levi. And of course, it was most common then for those firstborn sons of that line to serve in the temple as a priest, as a temple priest. But even though Jesus and most other people in the nation of Israel were not from that particular tribe, they were from one of the other 11, even though they weren't chosen to do service in the temple, they would also take their firstborn sons and they would bring them to the temple and they would offer some sort of animal sacrifice. As the law prescribes here, we hear it is either a pair of turtle doves or a pair of two young pigeons. The idea is that just as the Lord preserved, I think, the firstborn sons of Israel during the time of the Passover, whenever the angel of death struck down the firstborn among the Egyptians. It was a recognition that God has spared the lives of these, our firstborn sons, and so we owe them to him. And so that's what we hear about. That's what they're doing today. They're bringing Jesus to the temple to offer him to the Father. Now, the difference between Jesus and most other firstborn sons of Israel is that they are sons of God by adoption. Jesus is the Son of God by nature. He always was the Son of God. And so it's a meeting of these two persons of the Trinity in a way. It is also, I think it's a foreshadowing of what was going to come on Good Friday and also Easter Sunday. Simeon is once again saying that, Lord, now your servant can go in peace. He knew somehow that before he died, he would see the Messiah. And he was waiting for that. And whenever he saw Jesus then, he knew that he could die. And he says this to the Lord, his beautiful, beautiful prayer. Now, Master, you may let your servant go in peace according to your word, for my eyes have seen your salvation, which you prepared in sight of all the peoples, a light for revelation to the Gentiles, and glory for your people Israel. A light for revelation to the Gentiles, to all peoples. Jesus is that light of hope for those who sit in darkness. And again, think of it from Israel's perspective. As Deacon Mike has pointed out in his last couple of homilies, he made reference to the exile of Israel. Several hundred years before the time of Jesus, the people of Israel were just crushed and carried off into exile, most of them. And what they knew and loved and revered, particularly the temple and the way they practiced their beliefs, was all destroyed right in front of them. So they were a people that were very wounded and very crushed, and they were waiting for this to be undone somehow. And they were waiting for this Messiah who would do this. And that's Jesus. Although it happened in a little bit different way than they expected. And his victory was not necessarily a victory over politics or over armies, but over death and over sin. And that's what we place our hope in. And Jesus is that light. And so here is this feast really points to Easter. It points to the light of hope of Easter, that despite the cross, because of the cross, we can have hope that the resurrection can be imparted to us as well. We don't know when that's going to happen for us, but we do have trust, I think. We should have trust that it will one day come. So, the light that God offers to us. And here's another facet, too, that I kind of neglected. In our gospel, in our first reading, there's the double-edged sword to God and his word and his light. Simeon says to Mary, he will be a sign that will be contradicted, and a sword your own heart shall pierce. He's saying that Jesus is not going to be welcomed with open arms into every heart. And he's going to be contradicted, and he's going to be opposed. And we see that even up until today. So he was not only prophesying that Jesus would be eventually crucified, but he would also, and that Mary would share in those sufferings in a particular way, but that he would always, in a sense, be opposed by some. And then in our first reading from the prophet Malachi, this idea of the fuller who bleaches clothes and cleans them with lye, you know, and the refiner who refines metal with fire, you know, this idea is not really a pleasant sort of an idea, but yet something is purified in the process. And that's what Jesus brings to our lives as well. That light, that flame, purifies us. And sometimes it isn't the most pleasant of things. Very often it's not. But it purifies us and gets us ready for, I think, greater glory. We want the glory that he wants to give us. But finally, first and foremost, when we think of light, when you light those candles, and by the way, those candles are there for you to take. You know, your families, you're welcome to take those candles, one of those candles, and to let that be a reminder to you, that blessed candle be a reminder to you of the presence of Christ. And very frequently, you know, it's very traditional for those to be lit during times of distress or doubt, during storms, whether literal or figurative. You know, the storms of, you know, literal storms that are dangerous to us, the storms of our lives, and the dark clouds and the brooding clouds of our lives. Those are the things into which we need to invite the light of Christ to give us hope. And so take one of those and use that in devotion, if you would, during those times of darkness and doubt. And realize that this flame, this fire, this light that Jesus brings to our lives is for our purification, but also for our hope and eventually our glory.